Pastor Floyd Hughes from Crossroads Community Church of Jefferson Hills, and here with me tonight is
Heather.
And Adam is not feeling good, so keep him in your prayers. But on this episode of the podcast, I wanted to ask you something specifically, because a few weeks ago, you and Adam shared your testimonies here at Crossroads with our congregation. And we know that you kind of held back a little bit. You gave the, what do we call it, the Sunday morning church crowd version of your testimonies. The rated G.
The rated G version.
Yeah. So tonight I wanted to ask you, and next week we'll ask Adam if he's feeling better. If not, let me say, not next week, the next episode, we'll ask Adam to share his. But are you up for sharing, I don't want to say R-rated because that doesn't sound good, but the full, unfiltered version of your testimony and your story?
Yes.
Okay, so whenever you're ready, go for it.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, my name is Heather Wickerham, and I am an alcoholic. And I have, by the grace of God, 24 years of continuous sobriety. I didn't get that by not living my life. You know, I'll tell you how I got to that. So a little bit about my background. I'm an only child, and I was adopted by my mom and dad. I was 4 months old when they adopted me. So from a very early age, I had that hole in my soul of not being enough. Hmm. Why did my birth mother give me up? Why did my birth father give me up? You know, my birth mother, all I know is she was a freshman, I believe, in college down at Pitt University. And my biological dad was like a date, like a one night. They met and, you know.
Did you ever get the chance to meet her?
No, never.
Oh, okay.
When I was 3.5 days old, both of them signed over their rights. Hmm. And I was never in an orphanage. I went to a place in Shadyside. It was called Children's Home. It is now the Mario Lemieux Foundation for like sick children, premature babies. But that was way before I was there, and it was an adoption agency. So I had a wonderful childhood. You know, my dad worked for General Motors, and we never had fighting in our household. There was never any type of physical abuse, domestic violence, nothing. I don't even remember my mom and dad raising their voices to each other.
Were there any other siblings? Or
just me.
You were their only child.
I was the only one, yeah. And we had a very good life. My dad is also, he was a recovering alcoholic. So, you know, a lot of people say this is a disease. It could be hereditary or environment. I have to tend to believe it was part hereditary for me, but choices that I made, too, that took me over that limit. And so growing up, I was a normal child. I mean, my dad worked. My mother was a stay-at-home mom for, I think I was in second or third grade when she went back to work part-time. But she was always home or at the bus stop at 3:15 when I got home. My mother kept the house immaculate. I grew up with home-cooked dinners every night. My mom and dad, we would come to our table as a family, and we would talk about our day. That was all well and good until I picked up that first drink of alcohol. And
so,
I was...
Let me, not to interrupt you.
Sure.
But I'm probably going to do this a lot.
That's fine.
But you're kind of dispelling the myth that's out there that the only people that are struggling with alcohol are those who come from broken homes.
Right.
Or those who come from single parent homes.
Right.
Or those who come from poor homes in the
right.
ghetto or whatever. Because that doesn't sound like what you had at
no.
all.
No, I was very blessed. My dad worked at General Motors, and you know, I had everything I needed and wanted and more, and I destroyed that by taking my first drink. I had a lot of problems in school. I had a lot of learning disabilities. I was borderline dyslexic. I had a hard time. Like, I could figure something out in my head, but I couldn't show the work or show you how I got to that answer. And I test poorly. So I was in special ed classes from the time I was probably 10 years old until I graduated. So from like third grade until graduation, I was always in special ed classes. And I love special ed teachers today. They do so much for their kids. But when I had special ed, it was different. I went to Pittsburgh Public Schools, and we were separated from the mainstream kids. We had our own lunchtime by ourselves. We had our own field trips. I mean, we never did anything with the other kids. We were the special kids.
So you guys were isolated.
Yes. So there again was another feeling of not being enough, not being good enough. You know, my biological mother gave me up, and now I can't even be in a classroom with my friends. What did I do wrong? So I was about 11 years old when I took my first drink.
Wait, 11 years old?
11 years old. I was at my aunt's house for Christmas Eve. She's a big family. And we had Christmas Eve. All my cousins were there. Now, these aren't my blood relatives because I don't know who my blood relatives are, but they're my aunt. You know, that's how I grew up. They were aunt and uncle. It didn't matter to them. But I wanted to fit in so bad, and my cousins were all older than me. And my one cousin, she said to me, if you take a drink of this, you can be with us big kids tonight, and you'll be one of us. And that's all I wanted. And it was the worst drink I ever had in my life. It was peppermint schnapps. And I can remember, you know, taking that first drink. It tasted awful. It burnt the back of my throat. But I got a feeling that I never had before. I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling of I can fit in. And I drank it. And my cousins were also happy, you know. So during that night, you know, I would steal sips of, you know, if my uncle said, hey, can you refill my drink for me? My older cousin would be like, well, fill it, but take a couple sips off the top before you give it back to him, you know. And I wanted that hole in my soul so bad to be filled to fit in that I would have done anything. And that's when my drinking started, not daily. I wasn't a daily drinker at 12 years old or anything.
But that, sorry, cough. That feeling didn't come from the physical or chemical, whatever you want, effects of the alcohol. That feeling came from they accept me now because I'm doing this thing, because I'm taking these drinks.
Yeah. Okay. And unfortunately, I chased that feeling for the rest of my drinking career. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. So, you know, I was a miserable child. I was very discontent. I started lying at 13, 14 years old for stuff I didn't even have to lie about. I still was in special ed classes, and I went to church. You know, I did have a God. I did have a religion in my life. We were Presbyterian. But I, you know, I look at it now that God was on a shelf, and I only used him when I needed him, because I was brought up that for every bad decision you make, you're not going to see God when you die. So I didn't really think God loved me. And, you know, there again, I felt abandoned, you
know. More isolation.
More isolation, more. But when you drink, you fit in with the crowd. I thought I did. You know, the people at the bar, I thought they were all my friends. They were only my friends because I was put out the 20s and the 50s on the bar to buy everybody drinks. When the money ran out, they never, you know, so do the friends. So, you know, I go to church and I'm like, I went to church hungover, you know, I mean, just sick and miserable. I'm going to fast forward to like my high school and 20s. I'm not going to school. When I am in school, I'm not going to classes. I'm hanging out with the cool kids, the kids that are driving and smoking cigarettes and drinking in the back of their vans. And as long as I took that drink, I was a chameleon. Whatever the kids were drinking and smoking, that's what I drank and smoked. You know, if you were smoking Newports, I was smoking Newports. If you smoked Marlboros, I smoked Marlboros. If you were drinking Jack Daniels, I drank it. Anything to fit in. Right. Anything to be accepted.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So that doing that was filling that gap, that yes. need for acceptance. What were you feeling from the physical effects of the alcohol?
I was sick. I used to get bad hangovers, very bad headaches, dry heaves, exhaustion, the sweats. So my thinking was to avoid a bad hangover, you stay moderately drunk or buzzed continuously. Then that way I didn't have to go through that feeling, because one of my issues was I didn't like to feel. I wanted to be numb, because when I was numb, I couldn't get hurt. I couldn't get disappointed, you know? So by the time I'm 18 years old, I'm in high school, I'm a daily drinker. And when I say a daily drinker, I'm not one that's hiding the booze under the bed so I can take a sip just to get the shakes under control. I moved out of my parents' house, which was a blessing for them because I had already started to lie to my parents.
Did they know that you were drinking?
My mom didn't really know. My dad had it figured out because my dad was an alcoholic, so he knew the behaviors.
Was he in recovery at that
yes.
time?
Yes.
So he saw.
He saw the progression.
Did he say anything to you about it?
Not really. I mean, even if he would have, I wouldn't have listened. Because he would have been talking to the alcohol and not to his daughter.
Do you think maybe the reason he didn't say anything is because he knew that?
Right.
He'd been there and he's right. like, no matter what I say, she's
right.
not going to listen.
And I think he told my mom, you got to let her do it. You got to let her
get to where she's
right,
going
to
go.
She needs to be, you know. But, you know, daily drinking, the money that I spent, I could have bought 5 houses in my lifetime and pay cash for them. You know, I moved out. I moved in with another girl. She drank like I did. Her boyfriend drank. My boyfriend drank. We didn't pay any utility, you know, because I was better than any of that. I didn't need to pay utilities. Well, when you don't pay your utilities, you don't have them, you know. And that didn't bother me. I lived... the last house I lived in, I had no running water, I had no electric, and I was okay with that. Like, I was okay with that, because that meant more money for me to drink.
You know? I'm trying to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was okay with that. So, you know, of course, so we ended up losing that house. I had a crawl back home to my parents' house, and, you know, insanity is the definition. You do the same thing over and over, and you expect a different result. I said, you know, Dad, I'm going to come back home. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to do anything. I'll be in when you tell me to be in. I think that lasted maybe a month, you know. My mom and I started a fight. She couldn't understand why on the weekends I couldn't get out of bed before 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
This is your mom, the one I met.
Yeah. That wonderful human being, you know. And I'm making all these promises, and that's all I could do was make broken promises. So I, you know, and every guy that I ever wanted a date drank like me. I had a two abusive marriages. And my first marriage, ironically, I was sober during that and he was drunk. But I'll get you to that point in a couple minutes. So, you know, I ended up getting a job down in Pittsburgh working at Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. And I was making money like I've never made before in my life, full paid benefits, and I cannot pay my rent or my bills. And I'm sleeping outside of that building on the streets of downtown Pittsburgh.
Right. So you had a full-time job.
Yes.
Professional job that.
Yes.
Probably could have covered your bills and more.
Yes.
But you had nowhere to live.
Right.
And you were still day drinking at that time?
Day drinking, night drinking.
So you were going into that job?
Yes.
Drunk.
Yeah. Okay. And what was that, we had a print shop and showers because there was a little gym there. So I kept clothes in my desk drawer. I would get in before anybody else. I would shower in the gym, put fresh clothes on. And I was always, my job never suspected anything because I was always the first employee there. Every morning. I was there by 7 a.m. Well, it's easy when you're sleeping in the alley next door to the building, mm-hmm. you know. I used to have a tumbler on my desk with a lid from 7-Eleven, and people thought it was coffee or orange juice. It was vodka with orange juice.
So you weren't just going into work. You were drinking while you were working all day.
Yeah.
And that, did no one smelled it or said anything? Or?
Well, vodka, I mean, this is how stupid I was. I thought nobody could smell it. Because vodka, you can't smell after somebody. But I didn't know at this point I was drinking so much it was coming out of my pores, you know. But I don't, nobody really ever, I didn't lose my job because of drinking. I lost it because they didn't fire me. I resigned. But because I thought I had missed a lot of work and it was going to come down to the fact I didn't want them walking me out of the building. If they would have fired me, you know.
Yeah.
So I just told them I'm not coming back. I resign. So, you know, I lost that job. And then, you know, I'm drinking every day, every night. I'm living in a house in Gervaisburg. Now, by this time, I'm 26, 27 years old. My mom and dad are now not speaking to me. My dad just basically said, I can't watch you die anymore. And I never knew my dad knew that I was living on the streets. But after I got sober for a while, he shared the story with me. Him and my uncle were coming home from a pirate game. And they took a shortcut down this one alley. And he saw me filthy, skinny, on a mattress in an alley. And my uncle said, aren't you going to stop? He said, it won't make a difference. I wouldn't have listened to him or, you know. And to think that's what my alcoholism, that's the vision that my dad saw of his little girl. That's what we do to our families. So I'm living on the streets of downtown. I had a house. My uncle owned it. But I didn't pay any of the utilities or anything. But for some reason, and I know what this reason was, it was God. On October 29th, 1999, I'm drunk in my house. I'm out of money. I'm out of booze. And during my alcoholism, I snorted cocaine. Cocaine was not my drug of choice, but I did it so I could stay awake for days upon days to drink even more. So I lived with a drug dealer, so I never had to pay for drugs. And I thought I was living a good life. You know, I had arrived. And I'm in my house, filthy, absolutely no food, no utilities, no running water. The only thing I had was a cell phone that worked. That's the only thing I ever paid because I had to have the connection to the drug dealer and to the bar, you know. Kneeling on my living room floor, sick as a dog, because I'm to the point I can't get drunk enough and I can't get sober. I am in that horrible existence. And I can remember hitting my knees, crying. And I said, God, just let me die right here, right now. I cannot wake up tomorrow and do this again. Please let me die. Because I was so selfish, I thought if I died, my mom and dad would only have to cry one more time for me. And they'd be able to bury me and they could go on with their lives. Well, on October 30th, I came to. I was laying in my own vomit. I was laying in my own urine. I mean, it was disgusting. It was awful. And I remember crying and being mad. God, why did you wake me up? I asked you to let me die. And I guess God worked in my life because I made a phone call and I called my dad. Now, it's been many years. And I remember he answered the phone and I said, hi, Dad, it's your daughter. And I could hear that gasp on the other end of the phone like, ugh. And he said, are you in jail? And I said, no. I said, I think I need help. And like, that was God talking through me. And my dad says, well, your mother and I don't have any more money. We're not going to be able to help you. And I started to cry. And he said, where are you? I said, I'm at my house in Gervaisburg. I was 10 minutes from my mom and dad, and they never knew it. He said, can you get dressed and make yourself look presentable? And I said, I'll try my best. So he picked me up, and he took me to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in Glassport. And I walked into this place, and I'm shaking, I'm sick, I'm dry heaving, I'm nauseated. And I've never felt God as I did that day. And I didn't know that was God that I was feeling. But people came up to me, they embraced me, they said, welcome, have a cup of coffee. I couldn't even hold a cup of coffee. They had to put it on a table with a straw because I was shaking up out of my skin. So we're at this meeting and everybody was introducing themselves as alcoholics. And I'm like, well, why am I here? I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have problems like you guys. And my dad.
So wait, did you honestly believe that you did not have a problem with alcohol at that time?
I knew I had a drinking problem, but I just thought it was the crowd I was with. But the problem was it was Heather. And no matter what friends I had, Heather was always a part of it.
So you didn't think you were an alcoholic.
No.
You just thought, I get away from these people.
Right.
I can get my life back on track.
Yeah. Okay. And I thought, if you know, I'll try this AA meeting to get back in the good graces of my family. So I told, I'm like, I'm not speaking, I'm not talking, I'm not doing nothing. Well, everybody introduced themselves, you know, at an AA meeting. Hi, I'm Heather, I'm an alcoholic, you know. And my dad introduced himself, and the look on his face, I will never forget. He had that disgust, not angry, just disgust, disappointed, and sadness on his face, you know, sitting there with me, you know. And I can remember, like, he had tears in his eyes, you know. And I can remember, and, you know, this was another God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I stood up at that meeting, and I said, my name's Heather Wickerham, and I am an alcoholic. I said those words. They came out of my mouth. And I looked at my dad, and he started a bawl. He put his head down, and he said, Jesus, we can help alcoholics. We can, you know. And by the grace of God, that was my first exposure to a 12-step program, and I've been sober for 24 years since then. I met my first husband at an AA meeting, and he was only 3 months out of rehab, and I thought I could fix him and save him and make him all better. And he was very abusive to me. There was rape involved, and he let his son put his hands on me. His son would put me up against the wall, and he would stand there and watch him. So when I went to my one minister and told him, like, I need to get out of this marriage, I need a divorce, my minister told me, well, that's a sin. It's in the Bible. You can't be divorced. And I said, well, I'm going to die if I don't get out of here. So I ended up leaving that marriage. I had to file PFAs and you know, I was that woman.
Can I interrupt for 1 second? Just for anyone who is listening, and I'm not trying to refute or dispel anyone's denominational belief, but God does not want any of his children to be in relationships where they're being physically, mentally, verbally abused. And if you go to any house of worship or any pastor and they tell you to stay there, go find another one, go somewhere else, because they are wrong. I just want to make that clear, that that is not a standing of God and the church. That's a standing of people who don't understand God's love for humanity.
Right. So I left that marriage. I left in the middle of the night with the clothes on my back and $8 in my wallet. And I went back home to my parents. They didn't know the extent of the abuse because I hid a lot from them because I didn't want them to be hurt again, you know. So I'm going to meetings. And I had about 3 years clean and my dad relapsed because he retired and idle time on his hands. So at 3 years sober, I had to check my dad into St. Francis Rehab to get help. And that was difficult. I was living at home with my dad and I would argue. He said, I hate you. Don't you bring your sober stuff into this household anymore. Like, because it was the alcohol talking.
But you know that.
Yeah, right.
You and didn't feel
no,
that.
Okay. No. And it was, and I think, because he shared this with me before he died, that he felt I was the one that, he would have accepted it better if I was the one that relapsed. And he would have put me back together, you know. But, so my mom and I, you know, we got through that. I got divorced. You know, I had a 6-year period that I quit going to meetings. I quit praying because I had a God issue again. And I almost drank over it. Like, I wasn't doing anything. I was going back to the bars to do stuff. And, you know, I was that one that would take my big book into the bar and tell my friends, this is the new way of life, while they're drunk, you know. By the grace of God, I didn't pick up a drink. So, you know, I met another guy, refresh out of rehab. I don't advise that, you know. And, you know, we're living together, and he was more of the mental and emotional abuse. He never laid a hand on me. Very controlling. I never had kids. When I was 27 years old, it was 2 months after I got sober, I was diagnosed with precancer, cervical uterine cancer. So they had to do some procedures, and they said, you would never be able to conceive any children. So I had a resentment against God. Why did I get sober? I can't have kids. Well, my second ex-husband had grown kids. He was older than me, and they all had kids. And I mean, that marriage is dissolved, but out of that marriage, I have a granddaughter. Her name's Peyton Dawn. She's going to be 12, and she has never seen me drunk, never seen me high. And
did her parents?
No.
Okay.
No. By the time I got with Peyton's grandfather, I was already about 10 years, 11 years sober. So, yeah. So they never, none of them saw me drink. And when I,
but did they know your history?
Yeah.
And
oh yeah. Okay. Cause I shared it all with them. Cause I told them, like, I go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I go to these meetings. And Peyton, when she was little, she would stay weeks with me, and I told her mom and dad, what is your view about me taking her to a meeting? And they supported it. They were like, take her. Yeah. She'd play with her little iPad with her earbuds and stuff. And they said the way they view dad is, God forbid if she ever has a problem, she has somebody safe she can come to that'll understand her. But so I stayed in that relationship. I was in that relationship for 15 years, married for four of those 15 years. And it just got progressively worse. I stayed because I was afraid to lose Peyton and her family. I look at that now. I was afraid that if I left him, I would lose them.
Do you think that goes back to that abandonment?
Yes. Yes.
Being isolated from wanting to feel that love and commitment. Yeah.
And when I finally got honest with them, his son said, "You will never lose us. You are our family." And, you know, I haven't talked to my ex-husband. I haven't seen him. His son told me he is drinking again. And there's a lot of stuff going on there. But so, you know, that's a second marriage that's dissolved. And then I met he is now my fiance, Adam. We met in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but he had a couple years sober.
I was going to say, was he fresh?
No. And, you know, we both work this program to the best of our abilities. We both, he has some health issues. He has MS. So he's struggling tonight with symptoms. If you could just give a vibe, some stuff, we would really appreciate prayers. So our recovery comes first in God. So about, I don't know, Adam and I, we were struggling with our God, and we wanted to find a church, and this is no way to plug Crossroads, but that's how I came to know the God of my understanding, was working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because one of the key principles is it's a God of your understanding. Like, the God that I understand today is loving, forgiving, and very, very, very loving. He does not punish me. God does not do things to me to punish me. Jesus, his son, bled for my sins, for all those wrongs, for all those money I stole from my parents, for the broken promises, for all of that. I am forgiven, you know? And I'm involved in my church now. I sponsor people. One of the girls I sponsor, she's here now. I do meetings. Adam and I started a Life Recovery Bible study, which incorporates recovery with the Bible. Pastor Floyd was a big help with that, and he's one of our biggest supporters and encourages us with that. We meet every Thursday night. We get about 5 to 8 people a week, and it's developed a relationship with the God of my understanding that I never had before. You know, my dad, I don't want to cry, so, but
it's okay if you do.
I lost my dad. It'll be 6 years in April. He died sober. He died 18 years sober. He took my 18-year coin with him in the casket. My dad was on hospice for the last 5 days of his life. A lot of people feel sorry for me for that, but it was the best 5 days of my life because I was sober. I got through it sober, and I was there holding my dad's hand. My mother was there with him. He kissed my mother goodbye, and And I promised him, I whispered in his ear, "Go be with Jesus. I'm not going to drink." I didn't have to pick up a drink over that. It didn't even really occur to me, because I play that tape because I can't have a beer tonight just to calm my nerves. I will either end up in handcuffs or I will end up dead. That is my, where one drink will take me. I'm blessed. I don't have any felonies. I don't have any jail time. But, you know, that's waiting for me if I make a wrong choice today. Adam and I take a meeting to McKeesport Detox Unit the fourth Friday of every month, and that is such a reward of being sober. I get to go in once a month and sit with patients that are new, that are coming in from addiction and alcoholism, and they're homeless and they're so broken. And you see that little bit of hope in their eyes, and that, and you know, my life's full. You know, I have amazing women in my life that I love. I have men in my life that I love, and I don't, you know, people misconstrue that. I don't love them like you would love a husband. I love them like human beings. Like, you know, we can, we all have that common bond, you know. I can rely on God today for anything, and I give him everything. I mean, am I perfect at it? No. You know, like, I give God this situation, but an hour later I'm like, well, you've had an hour. Let me see if I can handle it, you know.
Well, let me ask you this, because
sure,
first relationship, marriage.
Yeah.
Very harmful. Second marriage, harmful. And you left that. And then losing your dad. At what point did you become, do you think that you became, excuse me, for lack of a better term, that you became not okay with, but not so fearful of that abandonment and that isolation?
When my dad passed away, because it's just me and my mom now. Like, we have no other family. Like, my mom's an only child. Every, you know, the only family we have is 4.5 hours away. They only come home for weddings and funerals. And I guess through my two marriages, like, I had to rely on me. You know, I had to make those decisions. Mm. And, you know, and like, you know, for as much as Adam and I love each other, and, you know, if something would happen, like, if he would, God wants him more than I, we just never know.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'm going to be okay. You know, I know that people don't leave me because I've done something wrong. You know, my birth mother, I would love to meet her and just hug her and thank her, because she did one of the most courageous things I feel she could have done for me. You know, she could have had an abortion. She could have kept me, and I don't know the kind of life I would have had. I resented her for a long time. That fueled my drinking a lot. But after coming to know God, working my 12 steps, and just having a whole new outlook on life, she did the most courageous thing she could have done. You know, I don't know if she's alive. I don't know anything about her, you know. I'd like to think that if God wants her to be in my life, he'll make it possible.
Well, I know your meeting's getting ready to start, but I want you to reiterate something that you said, because you said it so clearly and so effectively, and I feel like there are more people out there who need to hear it, because you were talking about how certain you are of God's love for you, despite all of your past issues. So just reiterate that again, because there are other people out there in that situation.
I have never been more certain in my life of God's love and Jesus's love and compassion for me. You know, and he didn't cause those bad things to happen to me. He brought me through them to him. You know, and my faith has to be bigger than my fears. And you know, I have a relationship with God and with Jesus today that, you know, my mom and I, we were just talking about this. God bless her. She's 79 years old. Rheumatoid. I mean, she has problems, you know, and she's like, you know, if I go to sleep tonight and I go live with Jesus, I know you're going to be okay. You know, and it'll hurt. It'll rip my heart out like it did when I lost my dad, but I'll be with him again. You know, I know I'll see my dad. And I know today, like, if I take a drink because my dad's gone, it's not going to bring him back at all. And it's not going to uphold his memory. And it's going to cause more havoc for my mom and more chaos in my life. And you know what? I'm 52 years old, 24 years sober. I don't think I can go through this again. You know, somebody said at a meeting one night, they have another drunk in them, but they don't know if they have another recovery. And that scared me because I don't know if I would do this again.
So, final thoughts.
Sure.
What would you say to that person specifically who was dealing with what you were dealing with? They're drinking or whatever drug they're doing to fill that empty hole of acceptance. What would you say to them?
You're not going to find it with that. You're going to find it with a God that you understand. And, you know, relationships don't fill that hole either. And, you know, reach out to somebody. It's difficult. It is very, very difficult. It took a lot of years for me to be okay with me. And, you know, the drink was just a symptom. You know, Heather was the problem.
So on that, I will say, thank you again. Definitely will be in prayer for Adam.
Thank you.
And I'll let you go so you can get started with your group as people are already showing up.
But that's all right. We got to about 10 minutes. So any comments or questions?
No, I think I interrupted you enough the whole time you were speaking. So, but again, thank you so much. And thank you both for what you guys do. Because people don't realize how much courage it takes, not just to tell your story on a podcast where no one can see you,
right,
but to sit with a group of people and tell your story over and over again to encourage them so that someone else might not have to go through
right
what you went through. So thank you guys both.
Thank you.